Good morning. My name is Jairus. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning. I come from a town near the Sea of Galilee, and I want to tell you a story of an encounter, an amazing encounter that I had with Jesus. So I was, at that time, a synagogue ruler. The temple worship was established in Jerusalem, and that was the main center for worship. But in each town and city, there would be a synagogue, and that was a place where good Jews would gather to hear a teaching and to receive a form of discipleship. Now, as the synagogue ruler, I was not a priest, I was not a Levite, I was a layman. You all might compare my role to that of the church chair. And so my duties were administrative. It was administrating the upkeep of the facility and also administrating the details behind the worship. I was a man of prominence then. I was fairly well-to-do and had made a good living in business, had formed many connections, and had a good social status in the community, and of course, too, I had very good relationships with the religious leaders, the Pharisees, the teachers of the law. And prior to the events of that amazing day, you know, how would I explain it? Probably a little bit arrogant, I might say. I was religious, I was devout, but I did not understand the critical difference between being religious and having a true relationship with God. I had heard about Jesus. You know, there were all kinds of fanciful tales being told, and on the one side of the ledger, there were people who thought that he was a great prophet. There were some that were even claiming that he was the Messiah, the Anointed One. On the other side of the ledger, there were those that were saying that he was actually quite dangerous, blasphemous. Of course, it disturbed me, some of the activities I heard about that he was performing on Sabbath day. And so, being that I was associated with a lot of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, some of them were even claiming that he was a threat to our worship and our whole nation because he could bring down the wrath of the Romans upon us. Some of the Pharisees were even claiming that these miracles that he was doing was by the power of Beelzebub. Well, I hadn't completely made up my mind, but I had been leaning more to the side of the Pharisees, the teachers of the law, until my daughter became sick and was dying. How old are you? 12 years old. That was the age of my daughter at that time. She was very beautiful like you. She could light up a room. All the wealth and the prominence and the status that I had still paled in comparison to my little girl. And let me tell you, I hope that none of you would ever experience this kind of tragedy, this kind of grief, when you see your beloved daughter dying. And when all the status, the wealth, the property, all these things that you have can do nothing to help her. True humility very often comes about when your pride is crushed. When all the things that you esteemed and held important, when you realize that they are superficial at best and even fraudulent. Because all those things mean nothing when your daughter is dying and they can do nothing to help you. So I was reduced to a state of absolute desperation. I knew what it might cost me if I were to go to Jesus. But let me tell you, as a father, when your daughter is dying, nothing else matters. You completely throw off with disdain any thoughts of dignity and decorum. If what I had heard about Jesus was true, and he really was a prophet, and he really could do miracles of healing, I made up my mind that I was going to go and appeal to him, throw myself at his feet. And that's exactly what I did. It was a stroke of grace that right as my daughter was at a critical stage, she was on death's bed, on her deathbed, I heard that Jesus had landed with his disciples there at the lake. And so I ran. And what I encountered was a large crowd gathered around him, a throng of people. But my grief, my desperation emboldened me, and so I pressed in. And when I came to Jesus, I threw myself at his feet. I wasn't worried about dignity or decorum. I threw myself down and pleaded with him to just come and lay his hands upon my daughter that she might be well. The Apostle Peter, one of the principal disciples of Jesus, later on would write, "Cast your burdens upon him because he cares for you." I literally was casting myself before him, casting my burdens upon him, and Peter is right. Because when I looked up, I saw compassion in his face. Immediately, he agreed to come with me. And so we began, and we started out for the house, and it seemed as if the whole crowd went with us. And they were pressing in. I was walking with Jesus, and honestly, I don't know how Jesus could hold up his composure in the midst of such a great crowd. And yet truly he was a man of grace. But as we hurried along, all of a sudden Jesus stopped. And he asked, "Who touched my clothes?" Well, one of his disciples stated the obvious. "How can you ask who touched your clothes? Look at all the people pressing against us." What we didn't understand was that power had gone out from him. And so he was asking, he was searching the faces in the crowd when all of a sudden a woman came forward and trembling threw herself down at his feet and began to tell him what had happened. And she started out explaining that she had been suffering for a long time from bleeding. Wait. Formerly, before that day, I would have been very upset by this woman, even offended. I wonder if some of the people in the crowd probably were feeling this. Because this woman shouldn't have been there in the midst of the crowd. She would have realized that what the Levitical law says is anyone that she comes into contact to would be rendered ceremonially unclean because she would have touched them. And here she had actually touched Jesus' cloak. And so you would have thought that she would have rendered him unclean. But when encountering pure holiness cannot be stained by us, but instead pure holiness cleanses that which is unclean. And in this case, even healed her. This poor woman, for 12 years, she had been suffering from a flow of blood. Women, you can understand then her condition. And she was used to being shunned by others. As I said, formerly I might have been put off with this, by this woman, but I felt an immediate kinship to her. We were like brother and sister in that both of us had come to Jesus in desperation, needing a miracle. And so she had come secretly. Again, she was used to being shunned by people, so she had this desperate thought that if she could just touch even just the corner of the hem of Jesus' cloak, maybe she could be healed. What great faith can often be born out of desperation. Now, some people have said that God is a crutch for the weak. Fine then. And maybe that is true. God certainly can be a crutch and give assistance to the weak. But isn't that true of our sinful human nature? That oftentimes, when things are going well, we can flat out ignore God, maybe just give him a respectful nod. But when we need him, that's when we turn to him. Let me give you some advice. If everything is going very well for you now, still, keep God close enough to you so that when you need him, you can turn to him. Because you cannot live long in this life before your moment of desperation will come. And her faith was rewarded, because the moment she touched just the hem of his cloak, power went out from him and she was healed. But as she was there trembling, literally trembling at his feet, I have to believe she was anticipating some sort of rebuke from him, maybe for rendering him unclean. But no, she only heard with compassion the words, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be troubled no more." Well, my faith then was only bolstered. And I knew that if this man, if Jesus could only lay his hands on my daughter, I knew she could be well. It wasn't my faith. I've since learned our faith only needs to be the size of a mustard seed. It's not the faith in me, but the faith in the object, the faith in him. And I was seeing with my own eyes the authority and the power this man had. But then, just as we turned to continue to my house, we were met by some of the men from my household who told me that my daughter had died and encouraged me not to bother the teacher anymore. That hope that I had been holding up just sank like a brick does in water. And there was, in that moment, a voice, an accusing voice saying, "What a fool you are. What misplaced hope." But the next moment, Jesus turned to me and said, "Do not be afraid. Have faith." And I saw in his eyes that authority and the power. And all of a sudden, that brick floated up to the surface. And I began to believe, still maybe the impossible could be done. And so we continued. When we got to my house, Jesus ordered the rest of the crowd to stay back. He only invited then his three primary disciples to come with us. As we entered the house, there was a great commotion, wailing and crying. A little girl had died, and so, of course, the family and all the servants. There was crying and wailing, and you need to understand, in our culture, we grieve loudly. We let it out. As I've come to understand a little bit about your culture, if I can give you some advice, when it comes to grief, don't try and be strong. Don't try and hold it in. You can judge our culture with the wailing and the crying. And sometimes it would go on for a whole week. If it was royalty, for a whole month. Some families would even pay to have professional mourners and minstrels come. But we would get it out. And we would cry. When we encountered this scene, though, Jesus stepped forward and said, "Why this commotion and weeping? The child is not dead, but asleep." The people scoffed at him. I dare say some were even offended that he would say this. And so they laughed. But again, Jesus took command, ordered everyone out of the house, and then just with his three disciples, myself and my wife, we went in and went to my daughter's room. What happened next, I have to say, the most amazing aspect of it was how simple it was. Well, there was no fanfare, no hocus pocus. And something, as I've thought about it since then, was very distinguishing. You know, when Elijah took on the 450 prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel, well, he called down fire, did he not? But it was obvious it was not his power. He prayed, and God brought down the fire. In our circumstance, Jesus didn't even pray. The authority came from within himself. And with just two words, he took my daughter by the hand and said, "Talitha kum." Talitha means little girl, and kum, arise. And my little girl stood up. She began walking around. We were all amazed. The disciples too. We had never seen someone rise from the dead, let alone my own daughter. We were astonished. Jesus brought us back to our senses, giving us the practical advice to give her something to eat. And then he gave us strict orders not to tell anyone about this, which, I got to tell you, that was a hard order to follow. I didn't even know how this was not going to get out into the gossip stream. Many in my household and some of the neighbors knew that she was dead. No, she was dead. But I tried to respect those orders. Well, at least until after Jesus himself had died and risen from the dead. And then I figured the gag rule was off. And so I have told this story as often as I can tell it to as many people as I can, because I want to encourage you. Jesus is real. And Jesus is the Son of God. Yes, there have been, on rare occasions, other prophets who were able to raise someone from the dead. But Jesus himself rose from the dead. And let me tell you, I saw in the power and authority of that man that he truly is the Son of God. And so I encourage you, believe. Believe in Jesus. Believe even for the impossible. Because even with that little seed of faith, God might just do something extraordinary for you. This is my story, and I thank you for listening. God bless you all. Okay, I'm going to do something else a little different. If I can step back into... Hi, I'm Pastor Steve. What struck you in that story? What stood out? What spoke to you? And so I'm going to have just 5 minutes of dialogue here. What was it about that you heard that struck a chord with you? Anybody? Yeah. Yeah. Pure holiness cannot be stained either by our sin or our uncleanness. But in fact, pure holiness can render that stain washed clean. That sin can be washed and completely done away with and forgiven. Good. Good. Anybody else? Chip. Who said it? Deep faith? Yeah. And again, it wasn't so much the faith of Jairus. Most likely, the day before this event, probably didn't have much faith in Jesus at all, but it was then his faith in Jesus. Jesus is the object of our faith. The reason I say that is, it doesn't require this amazing faith in me, as if in me I've got this faith, even faith the size of a mustard seed, but in the object of the faith, and God, Jesus, is awesome. So yes, good. Chip? Desperate people turn to God. Yeah. And in our desperation, and I want to encourage you, and I encourage myself in this, let's just absolutely push out of our mind all ideas of status or dignity or decorum and just go and cast ourselves before him. In desperation, throw yourself at the feet of Jesus. Humble yourself that he may lift you up in due time. Yeah. Anybody else? Yeah, Victoria. Yeah. So if I'm tracking with you too, like going back to Genesis, God spoke and creation, massive, amazing creation was happening. And so here Jesus spoke and life comes back into this little girl. And it is amazing. It is amazing to think. There was a hand up over here, Fiona. Yeah, you know, we don't have to be strong. And even when our faith is just crushing, it's God speaking with authority and all of a sudden bolstering our hope. Yeah, Felipe. Yes. Yeah, Jesus should be the first resource. Yeah. Yeah, good point. Good point. Before we exhaust all of our resources going to doctors and everything, to go to him, throw ourselves at his feet. He shouldn't be our last resort, but our first go-to. Good point. Yeah, Jane? Oh. She's asking if there's any significance. It was a 12-year-old girl. The woman had suffered for 12 years, 12 disciples, all that. I don't think so. I personally wouldn't make a lot out of it, although, you know, sometimes there is a significance. Certainly, we see in the Bible there are. The numbers can be significant in this case. I think so many of the other things stand out, but, yeah. Yeah, that's the one that might be the last one. Okay. Letting you wrap it up. Yeah. Good way to end it. Yeah, here Jairus, I'm sure, was a very religious and devout person. But it wasn't until he experienced Jesus and Jesus' power, and I'm sure established, how could he walk away from a relationship with Jesus after that? Impossible. And so there, but oftentimes for religious people, maybe it comes to a crisis. Maybe it comes to a point of desperation. So Jairus was trying to encourage you, even if everything's going great for you, just keep God close enough to you so that when you have your crisis, you can turn to him. That was actually wise advice my mom gave me when I was younger. Yes, and then certainly anybody that's feeling any sense of crisis or desperation, believe. Believe, and I would pray that we all then would have that encounter with Jesus. Jesus as God, with his authority and power, and be changed from being religious to having a rich, deep relationship with him. May it be. And all God's people said,